I'm John Aran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. You are listening to The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. My name is Carrington Harrison. Happy to be here. Rob Brenton is here with you as well. Shout out to those of you that are watching this on the stream, whether it's on Facebook, whether it's on Twitter. I refuse to call it the other name. Or you are watching it on Twitch. We appreciate you making us a part of your day. We still love you if you are listening on the radio as well. Doesn't matter if it's 96.5 The Fan or back on the old frequency on 610 AM. We appreciate you guys being a part of the show today. We are going to start our transition to week two against the Cincinnati Bengals. We'll do that here coming up in a bit. We'll also talk about Seth Lugo yesterday, who was absolutely masterful yesterday. Now, before we get going, I want to first issue a formal apology to K-State fan. Now, we have a rule on this show. You guys know on Mondays we do the roll call. Did your team win? I was able to put my hand up. K-State fan, you were also able to put your hand up. Rob was not a part of that group. His team lost on Saturday. And we have a rule on this show. If your team wins, then we will have on a player from your school. Well, this week, because of K-State's different schedule, because they play on Friday, they didn't have a normal media availability. So they said, we're not going to be able to get a player this week, but they promise if they win on Friday against Arizona, we will have a player on.
It'll be Avery Johnson, by the way.
We're going to get Avery Johnson on. So I apologize to you that there's not going to be a K-State player on the show today. We are doing our absolute best. We are going to have John Kurtz on the show, and we'll try to have Wyatt Thompson join us on Friday to get you ready for K-State Arizona. So K-State fan, I don't want you to feel left out. We did our absolute best this week. I just want to inform you, I try to be transparent with all of you guys about what's going on. We will get to the Royals coming up in a bit. We will get to week two of the NFL season in a little bit. But first, we got to get to like week 19 of giving you pizzas.
Pizza time on The Drive. Carrington, dial me up right now. Caller number 6 to 586-7965. They win a pizza from our friends over at Pizza Tasio. Pizza Tasio is Kansas City's best New York style pizza, and they have taken over the town. They lovingly use 100% whole milk mozzarella, all organic tomato sauce with locally grown fresh ingredients, all made by KC guys who both know and love pizza. So whether you're in the mood for a whole pie or you just want a slice or two, be sure to visit them now at pizzatasio.com. That's pizza, T-A-S-C-I-O.com.
I need you guys to do me a couple of favors. Number one, I need you listening to The Drive each day right here on 96.5 The Fan. Number two, I also need you to tell one friend. I don't need you to tell two friends that if you want some of the best pizza in Kansas City and you also are excited about the Royals going to the postseason, the best place for you to do that is with us right here on The Drive. The Royals have 81 wins, my friends. We are getting closer and closer to them locking up that playoff berth. And you know what? I can see it. Now, Rob and I have been critical of fans and their attendance, and that is not the purpose of what this small part of the open is going to be. But, Rob, you have heard this before. Royals fans, you have heard this before. The Royals have had a good crowd out there. They've had 30, 31,000 people, whether it was Big Slick, whether it was the day that Shaquille O'Neal was out there, DJ Diesel night against the Cardinals. And the Royals have laid an egg when there have been 30,000 people at the stands. And either you have thought this, either you have sent this in to Josh Vernier, maybe you have texted this, I don't know. But your position probably was, Well, this is why people are not buying in. That one game is exactly why I'm not a believer in the Royals. If we are going to have that stance on the negative, and you are allowed to feel the way that you want to feel, you have to allow yourself the opportunity to say that one game is the reason why you are buying in and why this team could do something special. Did you guys know that this is the Royals' third shutout in their last five games? Did you know that Seth Lugo just pitched one of the greatest games in the history of Yankee Stadium? Yes, the old one included. Seth Lugo yesterday had one of the best starts that a player has had, an opposing pitcher has had at Yankee Stadium. Seven innings, three hits, zero runs, no walks, 10 strikeouts, 105 pitches, and 77 of them went for strikes. Juan Soto and Aaron Judge didn't get on base yesterday. It was absolutely masterful. And we had a question on this show of whether Seth Lugo had hit a ceiling. We were getting to that innings mark, and he has pushed past that innings mark. In his last three starts, Seth Lugo has a 0.86 ERA. He has been absolutely masterful. If you want to envision the path for the Royals to do something special in the postseason, it is the starting pitching that they have gotten for the last 2 weeks from the guys that matter most. Rob was telling me a story how he was out with friends, and his friend hadn't really been keeping up with baseball. And his friend asked, well, who's pitching for the Royals tonight? And I can't remember the name Rob told me. It's like Michael Walker or something. And the guy asked Rob, hey, is that guy good? And Rob replied and said, it's the Royals. Almost all of them are good. If you want to come up with the pathway of how the Royals win the wild card series, how they potentially win their division, and how the Royals could be one of the more dangerous outs of any team in the postseason, it's their starting pitching. It's in game one, you go up against Cole Reagans. In game two, you go up against Seth Lugo. In the wild card, that's all it takes. If you lose those first two games, you are going home. That's how they do it. The Royals do it off the strength of Seth Lugo. They do it off the strength of Cole Reagans. They do it because their rotation just simply matches up and pitches better than your rotation. That won them the game yesterday. It could win them the series today on the road against the Yankees. You got a masterful start from Seth Lugo. Following it up on the back end, you got Cole Reagans going today in an environment that you know is going to be amplified. The Royals are playing in New York on 9/11. So you know it's going to be sold out. You know it's going to be patriotic. You know the crowd is going to be into it. This is going to be a playoff-like atmosphere, and you got a chance to take a series against one of the best teams in Major League Baseball, and you have one of the best pitchers in Major League Baseball going. That's how you do it. If you want to come up with the how for the Royals, the how is very simple. It's you continuing to get what you got from Seth Lugo yesterday in Yankee Stadium, as he had one of the best starts that that stadium has ever seen. He is one of five pitchers that have been that have pitched at least seven innings, not given up more than three hits, no runs, no walks, and at least 10 strikeouts. They've been playing baseball at Yankee Stadium, including the old one, for a long time. And for Seth Lugo to put his name on that list is very, very special. Let's talk a little bit of football, and I also have a conspiracy theory that I want to run by you guys here coming up in just a bit. Let's talk a little bit of football. Rob, you and I looked this up today because I was curious. Now, I know that some of you are going to try to say, well, what about sample size? We can figure that out. So they expanded the playoffs in the NFL in 2020. I was trying to get that COVID money, you know. They expanded it. So we have a little bit of a sample size that we don't have 10, 15 years of data, but we got a decent sample size now at this point with the expanded playoff format. Since they expanded to 14 teams, there have been 33 teams that have started the NFL season 0-2. Only two of those 33 teams have made the postseason. One is last year's Houston Texans, who won their division. The other one is the Cincinnati Bengals. Now, that is a gift and a curse. If Cincinnati loses this game, there is a team that is an organization that knows that they can overcome this and they can still get to exactly where they want to be at the end of the season. It also goes to show you how important this game is and how important it is to get off to a good start. And one thing that has held Cincinnati back over the course of the last 5 years is how poorly of a start they have gotten off to. Cincinnati, currently under Zach Taylor, they are 1-8 in the first 2 weeks of the season. And they are now going on the road to Kansas City as a 6.5, 6-point underdog. And a game that you need to win. Two of the last 33 teams that have started 0-2 have made the playoffs. You miss the playoffs if you're Cincinnati and you lose. That's what the math says. That's what the number says. And I know that they've defied it, but that's what the history, that's what the math tells me. Cincinnati needs to win this game. And if there is a team that I know Kansas City is going to take seriously, there's going to be a Monday that I come on here and the Chiefs just completely sleepwalk through that game. You guys have heard me over the years make the analogy that the Chiefs are a team that they do the right amount of work to make sure that they pass. You don't got to get an A in this class. You know what? I can kind of sleep through it. I can kind of turn some stuff in late. I can really cram for the midterm, and I can make sure that I get a B minus and keep my parents off my back. That's the energy that the Chiefs give sometimes in the regular season. They are not doing that against Cincinnati, not with the history between these two. Not when the mayor of Cincinnati has been critical of Patrick Mahomes. Not when that team has called it Burrowhead. You think that Patrick Mahomes, Chris Jones, and Travis Kelce are not going to be on their A game when that team is coming back to Kansas City with the history and rivalry between these two? Cincinnati has put themselves behind the eight ball. You lost to what we think is one of the five worst teams in the National Football League at the crib, and now you got to go on the road to Kansas City in what feels like a must-win game for you guys in early September to make the postseason. Another rough, disastrous start for the Cincinnati Bengals. Coming up on the other side, I have a conspiracy theory regarding something that's currently in the news in the NFL that I want to share with you guys. You guys call me Charger Dot and Corner Dot. This is Conspiracy Dot. That's coming up. Keep right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I want to share a conspiracy with you guys. Every week, I'm either going to give you something that I think is a conspiracy or something that I'm a contrarian on. I'm going to change what the CDOT stands for. You guys have told me it's about corner dot, complain dot, UMKC dot. None of those things. I'm here to reclaim my own nickname for you guys. This week, it's conspiracy dot. Now, you guys saw Deshaun Watson this past week. And Deshaun Watson, he was bad. He completed 53% of his passes. He threw for 169 yards, one touchdown, and two interceptions. That boy had a passer rating of 51.1. Things have been going terrible since he joined the Cleveland Browns. Since joining the Cleveland Browns, he has completed 59.1% of his passes, has 15 touchdowns, 11 interceptions. He is a shell of himself. Have you guys taken a look at the contract for Deshaun Watson? It is the worst contract in the history of the National Football League. Now, you might be thinking, what about Russell Wilson? What about Carson Wentz? No, it is Deshaun Watson. If the Browns cut Deshaun Watson at the end of this season, his dead cap is going to be $172 million. If they cut him at the end of 2026, it will be $99.8 million. They cannot get rid of Deshaun Watson until 2027. Unless he continues to be Mr. Nasty. Now, I haven't seen Deshaun Watson's contract, but I'm going to guess in there, certainly given his background from when they traded him or traded for him from Houston, there was some morality clauses in there. If you keep doing the things that you were doing in Houston, we can sever this agreement and get out of our guaranteed money. Is it not suspicious to anybody that literally the day after he plays terrible against the Cowboys, 25 million people watched it, another case just pops up with Deshaun Watson from October of 2020? This happened almost 4 years ago. It just happened to pop up the week after he was terrible. And if you are Cleveland and you have locked yourself in to guaranteed money, what is the only way that you can get out of that deal? It is by another scandal from Deshaun Watson and you being able to void his contract, very similar to what happened with John Gruden when he was the head coach of the Oakland Raiders. You remember, Gruden thought something nefarious was going on. Hey, how did these emails just leak? You're telling me that in the midst of all of this, my emails just pop up and now you guys can void the $60 million that you owe me? My conspiracy is that the Browns are the ones that just, hey, you guys don't know this, but Deshaun actually got in trouble. Why don't you go ahead and take a look into this? That's normally how information gets passed. You normally get a call from somebody who would know and then tells you, hey, I heard this or this happened. You should look into it. I can't tell you, wink, but you should check on this. What if this story came directly from the Browns so they can get out of his contract? Yeah, that's my conspiracy for the week. I think the Browns are the team that put this information out there about Deshaun Watson so they can start building the case. I wouldn't be surprised if Deshaun Watson keeps playing the way that he's been playing. More of these stories are going to come out. It's the only way to save yourself if you're the Browns. There is only one other way. You can't get rid of your quarterback. Let's say you cut him in the middle part of the season. His dead cap is $200 million right now. You are stuck with Deshaun Watson, the football player. But I'm guessing there is something in his contract that says you don't have to be stuck with Deshaun Watson, the person. And if he goes back to being Mr. Nasty Man, Mr. Happy Endings, you can get out of this deal. That's my conspiracy. The Browns put this information out there.
I don't think it's the worst conspiracy in the world because I imagine the Browns, who did this to themselves, and I have almost no sympathy for the front office, looked at Deshaun Watson that we all saw on Sunday and went, we have to get away from this. You mentioned yesterday Daniel Jones was also horrible. Daniel Jones you can cut, and it's relatively low financial punishment considering his contract. Bryce Young, Aaron Ladd's favorite quarterback in the NFL. If he stinks, he's still on a rookie contract. You can draft another one and go about your business. Name a quarterback that stunk on Sunday outside of Watson, and there is a path for that team to escape that player. There isn't one for Deshaun Watson. So it does seem a little bit, let's say hinky. We'll use the word hinky, that these allegations came out the Monday after Deshaun Watson was terrible. And we have not heard any Deshaun Watson allegations since, what, that HBO special? That's kind of the last time. Then the court system took care of it and Roger Goodell suspended him. All those things happened. It does seem like it's at least coincidental feeling that these two things happened so close together.
Now, a lot of people are making the point that there was a clause in his contract that they can't do anything about the allegations. I am going to assume here, and again, I have not seen Deshaun Watson's contract. I am just assuming that that was related to the stuff that we knew about. You just don't get blanket immunity for anything that happened before. hey, you told us about your little Instagram extracurricular activities. We're going to let you off the hook for that. But this is completely unrelated to that. This is a completely new incident. This is not related to the Instagram and I was going on there and I was, no, that's not, this is a completely separate issue. You don't get immunity from that. Not when we're talking about an NFL team and we're talking about $250 million on the line. So someone says, Carrington, what do you mean? I think Cleveland has known about this story and it just magically comes out the Monday after he plays poorly. I think they've been holding this in their back pocket as a break in case of emergency if you got to get out of this deal and they're about to pull the lever on this Deshaun Watson thing. I don't know anybody that thinks the way he's playing is about to turn itself around. And we think that Cleveland is about to eat $170 million for Deshaun Watson? $100 million for Deshaun Watson? No. Big business going to always big business. And that's my conspiracy for the week. I'll give you guys another one next week, but that's my conspiracy for the week. The Cleveland wanted us to know about this story because they're trying to get out of the deal. Let's move on to the Kansas City Chiefs. I have a thought, not related to any conspiracy theory. Rob, I went back and I was watching some of the highlights from the game last week. And as I was watching it, you know, we love player comparisons on this show, right? We're big player comparisons people. Oh, this guy reminds me of so-and-so, fill in the blank. I think I finally have the one for Rashee Rice. You know who he looks like? He looks like Philadelphia Eagles' Jeremy Maclin. I don't know why I didn't see that before, and maybe you guys noticed that, and I'm just an idiot. 913-586-7965. You can certainly tell me if you think I'm an idiot. But as I was watching him, and I watched the way their offense looked, the kind of routes that they had him running, he looked exactly like Jeremy Maclin with the Philadelphia Eagles. Are you happy if that's who he turns out to be? Because I would be thrilled if he turns out to be Jeremy Maclin, completely unrelated to him going to the University of Missouri. If you were telling me that he turns out to be what Jeremy Maclin was at Philly, and I think his ceiling's even a little bit higher than that. Jeremy Maclin only had 1,000-yard season when he was in Philadelphia. I think that we're going to see a 1,000-yard season this year from Rashee Rice if he stays healthy. But for a 5-year stretch in Philly, Jeremy Maclin was one of the better number two receivers in the National Football League. His average over the 5 years in Philadelphia were 68 catches, 950 yards, and 7 touchdowns. That's a really, really productive receiver. Now, that's not a legit number one. That's not a guy that's getting $30 million a year, but that's a really productive player. And in this offense, as the offense continues to grow and evolve, if you got that guy, if you got Xavier Worthy, you got Isaiah Pacheco, we'll see what the plan is in the future whenever Travis Kelce decides to step aside. This is a really good framework for a player. Do you like the Jeremy Maclin in Philadelphia comparison for Rashee Rice?
So I went a step further with the stats, and I pulled only Maclin under Reed in Philadelphia because the 1,000-yard season, it's worth noting, came under Chip Kelly. But Andy Reid's a lot of things. He's not Chip Kelly. As a positive, he's not Chip Kelly. On a 17-game average, Jeremy Maclin or Andy Reid in Philadelphia would average 74 catches a season for 7 touchdowns and 995. I personally, Rob Brenton, would sign up for that in a heartbeat. 74 for 995 yearly on average? Yeah. Sign me up. I'm all the way in. If Rashee Rice is a 900-yard guy every year in the NFL, the Chiefs have absolutely struck gold with their second-round pick. Party on, Wayne. But, and I'm curious what the text line thinks, because we both know how Chiefs fans operate. They have Xavier Worthy at 1,000 yards now because they had one good game. They had Chris Jones, Defensive Player of the year that he was bad the first 5 games of the season. Nick Bolton's been the greatest linebacker in the history of football, according to some Chiefs fans. They love their own players. Do you think Joe Chiefs fan is cool with 74 for 995 a season from Rashee Rice? Because he was a 900-yard guy last year, and after game one, he is the Chiefs' top wideout and does look like the trend line is he's a 1,000-yard guy. I think me and you are on the same page. 995 is great. Do you think the average Chiefs fan is cool with that? Because expectations, especially at wide receiver, have been a little out of control from this fan base.
It's so hard to say because I think a lot of it is predicated on what you think Xavier Worthy turns out to be. Like, let's say that you think Rashee Rice turns out to be a 900-950-yard receiver, and that's also what you think Xavier Worthy is. That's a capable offense. Sure, it's not what we think Miami's offense is with Hill and Jalen Waddle, but in this offense, certainly one that's going to spread it around, guys that can attack, guys that can beat you over the middle the way we saw Rashee Rice do, a guy that can beat you over the top the way that Xavier Worthy can. I don't know why people would have an issue with that if that's what he turns out to be. Someone on the text line says, C-Dot, isn't he a lot bigger than Jeremy Maclin? No, they are almost the exact same size. Jeremy Maclin is 6 foot, 200 pounds. They got Rashee Rice listed at 6'1", 204. So they are the same size. I think Macklin's probably a little bit faster than Rashee Rice. I don't think it's that much. I think it's a pretty good comparison. A lot of people were saying, what about Anquan Boldin? I don't see him as Anquan Boldin. Do you like that comparison? I think Boldin was much more of a kind of over-the-top, go-get-it, more of a jump ball receiver than I think Rashee Rice is. He also was just bigger than he is. Boldin was 6'1", 220. That's noticeable. Playing wide receiver in the league. I don't love the Anquan Boldin comparison. I like the Macklemore, but I also came up with the Macklemore, so that's probably why I like it.
I mean, Anquan Boldin's a fringe Hall of Fame guy. I mean, I would absolutely sign up for that, but I don't know I see that. Like, just compare rookie year to rookie year. Rashee Rice was a, 900-yard guy in his rookie year, which there's absolutely nothing wrong with being a 900-yard guy in your rookie year. That's very good for Rashee Rice. In Arizona, Anquan Boldin in his rookie year was a 1,300-yard guy. Then he got hurt the ensuing season. He came back healthy, 1,400 yards. Came back healthy, 1,200 yards. Every year Anquan Boldin was healthy in Arizona, he was a 1,000-yard guy. Like, you could write it down. Done. Boldin, 1,000 yards. Lock it up. You also had Fitzgerald that could do the same thing.
Yeah, so, Boldin's like a borderline Hall of Famer. Yeah. I don't think he is going to get in. He's in that Hall of Very Good. Anquan Boldin was a really productive receiver for a really long period of time.
I would sign up for him being Anquan Boldin, but I think that's a little high of expectation for Rashee Rice. And maybe the whole thing changes when Travis Kelce eventually rides off into the sunset. Like, Travis Kelce's 35. He's going to eventually retire from playing football in the NFL. He has the most famous girlfriend on planet Earth. He's eventually going to be full-time podcaster, actor, all those things. And maybe that changes the trajectory of Rashee Rice. But based on where Rice is right now, I don't think he's Anquan Boldin.
Text line 913-586-7965. C-Dot, Rashee Rice is clearly bigger than Jeremy Maclin. All I can do is just read to you the information. I mean, they both went to the combine. They were, Jeremy Maclin was 6 foot. Rashee Rice is 6'1". Jeremy Maclin was 198 at the combine. Rashee Rice was 204. So he is slightly bigger than Jeremy Maclin. They are about the size. He certainly is not Anquan Boldin. Like, if that's what we're saying is, he is not close to Anquan Boldin. Anquan Boldin was almost 25 pounds bigger than he was. That is a significant difference. So no, he's not that much bigger than Jeremy Maclin was when he was at Mizzou. Maclin just got the known just being the speedster kind of wide receiver on the side. But again, I think Maclin, certainly in Philadelphia, he only really had one good year in Kansas City. That first year was a strong year. But in Philadelphia, Jeremy Maclin, during that time, was a really solid number two wide receiver behind DeSean Jackson. You had two speedster wide receivers, kind of the same dynamic. You had the over-the-top guy, and that's what you think Xavier Worthy is, and you had the guy that could kind of do the dirty work over the middle, and that was Jeremy Maclin. They had a pretty productive passing game in Philadelphia for about 4 or 5 years with those two, and you also had a great running back with McCoy.
What was Macklin's most productive year in Kansas City? If you're looking, was it 2015? Is that the year?
Yeah, hold on. I just pulled it up. I just closed it out to look at the combine numbers.
I would say that it's possible that Rashee Rice is Kansas City Maclin, because 2015, Travis Kelce existed. Now, he's not Travis Kelce of, oh my goodness, but in 2015, the Chiefs had Alex Smith, Travis Kelce, and Jeremy Maclin all on the field at the same time. Now, Mahomes is better than Smith. I'm aware of that, but I don't think it's impossible if he has a Kansas City-like season. I just think more consistently he'll be the Philadelphia guy. But 2015 had Travis Kelce on the field, too.
So his first year with the Chiefs, he only played two seasons with the Chiefs. His first year with the Chiefs, he had 87 catches for a little less than 1,100 yards, 1,088, and 8 touchdowns. Now that I'm looking at this, tell me this doesn't sound like what you think Juju Smith-Schuster is. So Jeremy Maclin came to the Chiefs when he was 27 years old. He had the season that I just mentioned. His next last year. He had 44 catches for 536 yards. He then played one more year in Baltimore. He had 40 catches for 440 yards and three touchdowns. He was out of the league by the time he was 30 years old. Does that not sound like Juju Smith-Schuster?
I mean, it's – and there was some health things with Macklin, correct?
Like, yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, that it's very Juju-ish. It's Juju adjacent at the very least. Like, that does sound a lot like, hey, not reclamation project, come here – ball out, and then we moved on. Yeah, I mean, that is very Juju-ish.
That sounds exactly like Juju Smith-Schuster.
Except for Macklin didn't get the massive contract when he left. Juju got a little chased the bag. Macklin left because of, well, he didn't volunteer to leave. He was told to leave, but he didn't chase the bag the way Juju did.
Yeah, it feels like we are at the 15th hole of Juju Smith-Schuster's career. I don't think that Juju is going to play in the NFL for too much longer. So usually, here's where I would throw a running back topic out there, Rob, to just annoy you. I don't have a running back topic for you today, but I do have a linebacker topic.
They're the same.
Are we seeing what their plan usually is at corner, where you let Snead go, you traded Snead to the Titans, you let Charvarius Ward walk in free agency, he went to go play for San Francisco. Are you seeing the exact same thing play itself out in real time at linebacker, where you currently have Nick Bolton, you have Leo Chenal, who played really well in week one? Are we seeing we're going to finish out the rookie contract from Nick Bolton? We're going to thank Nick Bolton with a very nice graphic on social media for everything that he did. He's a true son. You can always come back. You can bang the drum. You'll come back when we celebrate our Super Bowl teams, and no one will forget the impact that you had in scoring a defensive touchdown. Probably should have scored a second one, and maybe could have been Super Bowl MVP. I still think it was a fumble on that second play, but that's neither here nor there. Are we not seeing the transition and the torch being passed, where next season that person's going to be Leo Chenal and he's going to be the one wearing the green dot? He's going to be the one still on the rookie contract. Am I crazy in just the secession path is happening right in front of us? Is it not happening right in front of us? We saw it happen at corner. They had L'Jarius Sneed. They never negotiated with L'Jarius Sneed. They had no interest in Sneed coming back. He went to go play for the Titans, and they gave his job to Jalen Watson and Joshua Williams. Are we not seeing the same thing play itself out right now, a linebacker with Nick Bolton? That Nick Bolton finishes out this year. You hope he balls out this season. And then they hand the keys to Leo Chenal on his rookie deal when it's his turn to do with it what we saw Jalen Watson do in week one against Zay Flowers.
I think the answer is yes. But I'm curious how the draft this upcoming season shakes out. Because with corner, you could usually see it coming. There were people on the depth chart, albeit young, that you knew were coming. Like when Charvarius Ward, when they walked on him, they had drafted L'Jarius Sneed. He was on the roster. They then went out and drafted McDuffie, Williams, and Watson. They were building the heir apparent. We saw with Kendall Fuller. They drafted, albeit Rashad Fenton, they drafted that guy. They have always had a contingency plan in the ensuing draft. They didn't draft any linebackers last year. Now they have Leo Chenal and they re-signed Drew Tranquil, so maybe those, as you said, are the answers. But it usually is they draft a guy a year ahead so they can walk away. They did not do that at linebacker this year, so I think the answer to your question is yes. The line of succession is laid out at linebacker. And by the way, if that's the case, bravo, Brett Veach. Use draft picks to fill that position because never pay it. But I'm a little bit hesitant because usually you can see the next step because they draft the corner and then they walk on the other one. We didn't see that in this last draft back in Detroit.
Someone on the text line says, don't they usually have the replacement on the roster right now? Who would then replace Bolton? But then my question would be, my follow-up would be, what's then stopping them from finding another Drew Tranquil? Like, if there is a position on the field where you feel like the value that they bring on the field maybe is not reflective in what they're going to get in offseason contracts, isn't that guys like Drew Tranquil? Guys like Drew Tranquil are never breaking the bank in free agency. So what if the plan for next year is we're going to have Leo Chenal and Drew Tranquil,
We're going to draft somebody, and then we're going to look in free agency, and that second tier of guys, we're going to pounce on that, and we're going to sign somebody for a one-year, $4 million deal, and we are going to come out exponentially cheaper than if we had kept Nick Bolton. What if that's the plan for next season?
It's a great plan. If that's the plan, you know I love that plan. Cheap it up, draft it up, make it work. Never pay non-premium positions premium money. So if that is the plan, sign me all the way up. I love Leo Chenal. He looked great in the Super Bowl and against the Ravens. Drew Tranquil last year was sensational, especially when he had the green dot on when Nick Bolton was hurt. But outside of those two, it's not a position the Chiefs are super deep at. You can always find guys. You can always find players. But I do think that the text line makes a somewhat valid point. They are lacking at depth of that position. So maybe, just maybe, that's not their plan. But I hope against hope that is, in fact, their plan.
Text line 913-586-7965. CDOT, do you think that Nick Bolton is just going to get the franchise tag? The franchise tag for Nick Bolton is going to be $20 million. I mean, if based on last season, the franchise tag for linebackers, the franchise tag was $24 million. The transition tag was $20 million. They would just franchise tag him. They're not putting a $24 million a year salary on Nick Bolton for this upcoming season, no. So I don't think he is a candidate to be hit with that. I actually think if you're going to give it out of those two, I think you are much more likely to franchise tag Trey Smith. Now, it's also expensive. Like, we were at the point where there are no cheap franchise tag options, basically aside from tight end and running back. That's it now at this point. Offensive lineman franchise tag is $20 million. D end is $21 million. D tackle, linebacker, corner. There are no cheap options for your franchise tag. I just find it hard to believe that they're going to put a $24 million franchise tag on him just because linebacker, usually that's for the pass rushers. I just don't think you're putting that on an inside linebacker who is much more of a tackle guy than a Michael Parsons go get a bunch of sack guys. Coming up on the other side, we will talk a little bit of college football and how Colorado has reached what Bill Simmons used to call the Tyson Zone. I'll explain. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Bill Simmons has this thing, he calls it the Tyson Zone. And the Tyson Zone is that somebody can get to a level of craziness or infamy or notoriety, whatever it is, that any story about them starts to become true. For example, Aaron Hernandez. There was like a year stretch there where there was any story you could have told us about Aaron Hernandez, and you were like, oh yeah, that makes sense. No, I could see that. We are reaching that point with Colorado. Let me give you an example. You guys remember this summer there was the story that Deion told the team, if you don't show up to Shadur's concert, you are kicked off the team. He was opening up for Lil Wayne, and the rule was, if you are not at the concert to support Shadur, you're off the team. And a group of kids transferred and said, you wouldn't do this for everybody. You're only doing this for your son. That was one story. Well, there's another story that's coming out right now. And this is the story that, so a radio station in Denver is reporting that Deion asked the school not to play the fight song if his son scores a touchdown. So if his son runs in the touchdown, he asked them to not play the fight song so his son's song Perfect Timing could play. Now, Deion came out and said the statement was nonsense. The school even released a statement about it. Every story about Colorado seems true. There was a story a couple of weeks ago that they had like a gambling ring inside of it with their NIL money. Any story you could tell me right now about Colorado would make sense. We all see where this is headed, right? You know where the Deion situation is headed? I'm going to tell you. it's headed to him stepping down at the end of the season to focus more on family and his health. That's where this is leading. His kid's going to get drafted in the first round. Travis Hunter is also going to be drafted in the first round. This story ends with Deion saying that he wants to spend more time focused on his family, his faith, and prioritizing his health. And Deion steps down at the end of the year. He's having a tough time rebuilding it with two superstar college football players. How do we think that's going to go next year when those two guys are playing for Tennessee and Las Vegas? It ain't going to be going good. Y'all saw the whipping they just got this past week. We've seen Colorado play, what, 13, 14 games with Deion as the head coach? They've been whipped in half of those. Remember, they got smoked last year by Oregon. It's one thing to get rolled by Oregon. They're getting rolled by Nebraska. And Nebraska's better this year, so this is no shade towards the Cornhuskers. That's a 7-win football team. They shouldn't be that much better than you. Colorado is not going anywhere near a bowl. Not a Pop-Tart bowl. Not a nothing. That is another 4-8 football team. That's the same team as last year. That's what they are. They're the same team as last year. So the story, if you guys missed it, that Deion asked the school not to play the fight song because they wanted to play his smash single, Perfect Timing, that is on iTunes right now. If you would like to check out the latest from Shedeur Sanders, sometimes he plays quarterbacks. He also fancies himself as a SoundCloud rapper. I'm actually still high on Shedeur, the football player. No, some of you are not high on Shedeur. That team can't block. That team can't run the football. I'd like to see him on a team that could do both of those things. It's kind of hard. It's hard to play quarterback when your team can't run the ball and they can't block and protect you.
And they can't stop anyone.
Yeah, it's bad. It's very, very difficult to do. So good luck to Colorado. I believe they play Colorado State. It's one thing to lose like that on the road against Nebraska. They play Colorado State at night on CBS. Lose to the Rams this week. And I'm telling you, you can just see it happening right now with Deion Sanders. He's had health issues in the past. You can just see it. He's got a built-in excuse to step down from this team. Man, I want to support my son. You know, my health has been flaring up. I want to get back to focusing on myself. You can see the writing on the wall for what is going to happen at the University of Colorado.
Do you think either both of them finish the year there?
Yeah.
I'm looking at their schedule.
I think they'll finish.
Colorado State, they should win, but oh boy, rivalry game. Then Baylor. Baylor stinks. And then this stretch here is brutal. UCF, K-State, and Arizona, back to back to back. That's three poundings.
You can't quit if you're the quarterback. Now, I could see Travis
Hunter. If
Deion
quits, do you think his son sticks it out? Yeah, he didn't stick it out last year. He quit. He was hurt.
You saw the way he was getting hit last year. I think his son was hurt. I could see Travis doing that at the end of the year and just shutting it down. And I'm going to be a top 10 pick in next year's NFL draft. We're not going to the bowl game. There's two games left. I don't know if you can do that as the quarterback and the coach. You talk about the criticism Deion's taking right now. Deion steps down during the season because that team's getting smoked. Oh boy, it is not going to be good for him. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll get back to the NFL and take a look back to week one. But before we do that, Vern was on the morning show earlier today, and he was asked if he would start positioning the rotation and the bullpen for the playoffs now, as it seems like a foregone conclusion. This team is going to play in October.
I think once a first-round bye is out of reach, I think then you start lining it up for the wild card series, because until the wild card series is the last option, I'm trying to earn that bye. So I don't know when that happens, but shoot, 16 games remaining, I would imagine it's going to be fairly clear by this time next week. Yeah, so, you know, a week, 7 games, 8 games from now, I think it'll be pretty clear of whether or not they should put the foot on the gas pedal and try and track down Cleveland over the course of those final 6 games on the road against Washington and Atlanta, or if that's all right, let's prepare for this postseason push, these 3 straight games starting up on Tuesday, October 1st.
I mean, this seems like a no-brainer to me if you're the Kansas City Royals. You don't start packing this thing in until the chance to win the division is completely gone. The Royals have a chance to avoid being the wild card team that is on the road, and they can be hosting the 3-game series for the wild card. The Royals, you got to go for it until there's no reason to go for it again. Now, at the end of the season, let's say you're 4 games back with 2 to go, then yeah, you start to position yourself to make sure that Reagans goes in game 1 and to make sure that Lugo is going to pitch in game 2. But as long as the division is still within a realistic grasp for the Royals, I don't think you can start packing this thing in. You also haven't clinched your playoff spot now if you were them. So I understand the question, and that's a question that we should be asking in 2 weeks. I just don't think at this point we need to be having the conversation about how you line things up for October 1st. It's September 11th. We still got time to get to that point about how you want to handle the postseason. Coming up on the other side, we're going to get back to the NFL. We're going to play a very simple game. We're going to go through 0-1 teams in the league, and we're going to play patience or panic. I'll tell you what side I'm on with maybe your favorite NFL team. That's coming up. Keep right here. So drive.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.